Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Going to read both 26 and 27. 26 has no purport. So we'll chant 27.
Shochachyashru kala sadvi
durbhage vohita sati
abrahmanya nripa vyajam
shudra bhokshanti mam iti
Shochatyashu kala sadvi
durbhage vohita sati
abrahmanya nripa vyajam
shudra bhokshanti mam iti. I'm going to read that previous verse's translation, then this one. So text 26. The burden of the earth was certainly diminished by the personality of Godhead and by others as well. When he was present as an incarnation, all good was performed because of his auspicious footprints. Now she, the chaste one, being unfortunately forsaken. Actually, it's Iva, like, or as if. As if forsaken by the personality of Godhead, laments her future with tears in her eyes, for now she is being ruled and enjoyed by lower class men who pose as rulers. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Kshatriya, or the man who is qualified to protect the sufferers, is meant to rule the state. Untrained lower class men, or men without ambition to protect the sufferers, cannot be placed in the seat of an administrator. Unfortunately, in the age of Kali, the lower class men without training occupy the post of a ruler by strength of popular votes. And instead of protecting the sufferers, such men create a situation quite intolerable for everyone. Such rulers illegally gratify themselves at the cost of all the comforts of the citizens, and thus the chaste mother, Earth, cries to see the pitiable condition of her sons, both men and animals. That is the future of the world in the age of Kali, when irreligiosity prevails most prominently. And in the absence of a suitable king to curb irreligious tendencies, educating the people systematically in the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, clear up the hazy atmosphere of corruption, bribery, blackmail, etc. Just a little reset, or stepping back from the dialogue here for a moment. The scene is the personality of Kali breaking the legs of a bull. The report goes to the king. The king is simultaneously angry like fire and enlivened like anything, because now his Kshatriya spirit is being invoked and provoked. And with his entire army, he goes to deal with this person. And it's very obvious what's going on. He's got a club. The legs of the bull are broken, three of them, and he's banging on the other one. But before just acting, he, you know, gives whatever it's called, due process. So he asks the bull, who has done this to you? And then there's this long, well, it's difficult to say what the cause of action is. Some people say this, some people say that, some people say the other thing. It's very difficult to say what the cause of action is. And then comes this section where, again, Maharishi Pariksit is speaking to the bull, and of course he's also addressing the cow, specifically in this verse. And he begins by saying, it's very clear, your dharma. In case there was any question about it, there's no question about it, your dharma. And then he says something that's directly connected to this verse, that's why I'm going back, and that is essentially the plan of the Lord, as is the Lord, very, very difficult to understand. Not by ordinary means can one understand. He's not understood by ordinary means. He's beyond reason. By the process of logic and reason, one will never approach him. He's beyond that. What is this similar to an earlier chapter where Bhishma Dev is speaking about the plan of the Lord? You know that from chapter 9. Don't try to understand the plan of the Lord. It's inexplicable. Great sages and learned personalities and demigods and you name it, they try to understand the plan of the Lord and they can't understand the plan of the Lord. So don't try to understand the plan of the Lord. Although we sometimes try to understand the plan of the Lord. Like, what does Krishna want? That question. What's the plan of the Lord? It's a good question to ask. It's a question we should ask. But at least one of the responses to that question is, don't ask the question. It's inexplicable. But then, although it's inexplicable in one sense, it's revealed through devotion. It's not approachable through logic and reason. It is approachable through bhakti. That's the secret to understanding the plan of the Lord. It's through devotion. Because scripture reveals the plan of the Lord. But it's not, even those who are, it's revealed, those who are not devotees aren't going to understand the plan of the Lord. It's right in front of you, black and white. And one is still questioning. Like Prabhupada speaks about the, I forget what they call themselves, Vedantists, searching for God. He's disclosing himself, here I am, ta-da, searching for God. Because they don't want God. They don't want a relationship with the personality of Godhead. They don't want. They want something else, and so they're searching for God. Searching for the absolute truth. So the inquisitive spirit is not only good, it's necessary. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a whole book called Search for Truth. Not like bad. The inquisitive spirit must be there in order to have truth disclosed. There's a biblical saying, which is true. Seek and ye shall find. You've heard that one before? Same principle. When the heart is open for, you know, what's the goal of life? Or what is Krishna's purpose? It's not to be understood by logic and reason because it defies logic. Krishna isn't bound by our little puny logic. Like, you know, why is my circumstance the way that it is? There is an intention of the Supreme Lord, but we won't understand it. So to emphasize, it's not by logic and reason. That's the statement made. It's text 23. Then he goes on to describe what's happening. The breaking of the Kali's doing his thing. This is the age of Kali. So, why is it? Why does Krishna create a system where there is an age of Kali? He could create a system where there isn't one. Right? Or why creation, period? You know, people ask the question, like we discussed this a little bit yesterday. Why is there suffering? Why? So some people become atheistic because to them there's no good answer. You know, the logic goes, God is all good, God is all powerful, he can do whatever he likes, and he makes something where people suffer. So why is that? Conclusion, there's no God. For some people, that's their conclusion. There was a very popular bestseller, printed multiple times by a Jewish man who, you know, in those of Jewish faith or tradition have over long periods of time been the object of persecution. They consider themselves the chosen people, at the same time, the persecuted again and again and again and again and again. So he wrote a book. Why do bad things happen to good people? You know the question. It's like, so his conclusion by Tarka, by his logic and reason, well, he made a mistake. God's allowed to make a mistake. He made a mistake. Jewish people shouldn't suffer, but they're suffering. He just, you know, he meant well, but he made a little boo-boo. Popular notion. Not atheistic, but not theistic either. So here, in this verse, the dilemma is similar. Apparently, look at this. Dharma is being smashed. And Mother Earth is Durbhaga, as if abandoned, neglected. How can Krishna do that? How can Krishna allow, after departing, so the previous verse, text 26, is when Krishna was present, the burden, specifically, text 26, Bhara, Uru Bhara, the great burden of the earth, the burden of the earth that was, you know, going back to, the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, where the demigods approached with Mother Earth. The demigods approached Lord Vishnu. Earth is overburdened with demoniac kings. The burden is the demoniac kings. The burden is the burden of the sins and the miscreant activities and the consequent reactions, the adharmic burden. So Krishna came. And he removed those demoniac kings and the burden created by those demoniac kings. He removed the burden of the earth. How? Just by, in the verse 26, tatpada nyasai, just by his srimadabhi, his auspicious presence created auspiciousness. And it removed inauspiciousness. Light destroys darkness. Krishna destroyed all inauspiciousness. The burden of the earth was finished. But then he left. And now, with tears in her eyes, the earth is crying. It's as if I'm abandoned, all alone. Krishna has left. No protection. No protection of the cow, no protection of earth, no protection of religious principles. Religious principles are being broken. Deliberately, intentionally, systematically, by the personality of Kali. So there's this interesting movement back and forth between that description, the breaking of the legs of the bull by the personality of Kali, and then back to the other side of the earth having person in administrative positions that are not giving protection to the sufferers, or unqualified kings who are living at the expense, however they arrange it, through taxation and this and that and the other thing. So they live a comfortable life, and the people that are meant to be protected by them are not being protected by them. Now, the protection, what's the protection? It's in one sense, it's upholding by their very upholding of religious principles. By their upholding of religious principles. And the duty of the king is to see that the citizens are upholding religious principles. There's the protection. You know, dharma, rakshata, we mentioned that little phrase before. The citizens are protected by engaging them in dharma. They're protected by dharma, not just by the powerful arms and the sword of the king. He may have to use his powerful arms and his sword, but you know, what are the terms? There's shastra and there's shastra. So first comes shastra, propagating shastra, and then if there's those that just refuse, then there's shastra. Then there's stick or sword or punishment. And interesting in this verse is the third line. Abramanya nirpa vyaja. So Abramanya, the word for word is devoid of brahminical culture. Nripa, a king that's devoid of brahminical culture. What does that mean? So he's a kshatriya. He's not brahminical culture guy. He's a kshatriya guy. But the king has the duty of seeing that brahminical culture is respected and protected and propagated. And that's his role. And then the Brahmana has his role, and the Vaishya has his role, and the Shudra has. Everyone has their role in respecting Brahminical culture. And so these principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness apply to everyone, not only to the Brahmanas. They apply to everybody. That's Brahminical culture. That's pillars of Brahminical culture. Again, like the discussion yesterday morning, the correlation between Vedic and Bhagavad Dharma. They're intimately connected. And particular for this age of Kali, because the principles of Vedic culture, the principles of Brahminical culture are neglected, and not just neglected, violated, abusively by the kings, by people in leadership positions, without detailing. There's so many aberrations of how that goes on. So many. Awful. It's just my mind is. I could easily spew out, you know, some very bad things that leaders do in the name of, you know, leadership? Propagate a dharma in the name of leadership. And so the people suffer. They're not protected. That kind of protection. Not just, you know, somebody harms one of our citizens, so we go and, you know, let him have it. Not that kind. That's subordinate to the higher principle of protection, the dharmic principle. Without the dharmic principle, there isn't real protection. It's pseudo-protection. And even that dharmic protection, it's, according to the Bhagavatam, it's totally inadequate. It's useless waste of time without the purpose behind that dharmic function, attaining shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So what to do? Just throw your hands up in the air and say, what to do? Now the Bhagavatam has its answer. The Bhagavatam is propagation of Bhagavad Dharma. As Prabhupada is saying, your systematic education of the principles of Bhagavad Dharma. That's what to do. And someone can say, well, you know, that's inconsequential. People say that. You know, what's wrong with you people? You don't get involved in causes. You know, this political cause and that movement and something, something, something. So, why we don't do that? It may be harmonious with the higher principle. Some principle over here is harmonious, like vegetarianism or something. We're not a vegetarian movement. Prabhupada made it very clear. We encourage people to be vegetarian, but we're not a vegetarian movement. We're a transcendental movement. Our message is a transcendental message. Before coming to India, I was in China, and I was hearing it was Nrisimha Maharaj, a devotee from Scotland, who speaks fluent Chinese. He's been visiting China for, I don't know, a couple of decades and more. He was getting red in the face describing, you travel in the northern countries, northern, you know, parts of China, and it's fields and fields and fields and fields and fields and fields of corn and soybeans. Why? It's for feeding animals. It's for cow killing. Now they're worried about, you know, the whole message. Worried about enough. Is there enough food for all the people? Certainly there's enough food for all the people. It's just, instead of meat, just grow vegetables and edibles for human beings. But instead of doing that, it's fields, it's miles and miles and miles. And it's not, you know, only China. Anyway, the anomalies of Kali Yuga, it's really easy to get lost in complaining about what they are. What's the cure? Propagation of Bhagavad Dharma. That this question that's being raised here, or the dynamic of what's in the verse, comes in the first chapter of Canto 1. With the sixth question of the six questions was, now that Krishna has left, where will religious principles find their shelter? You know that question. And the answer is, shortly after Krishna's towards the end of chapter 3, after Krishna's departure, shortly after, this Srimad Bhagavatam has appeared. As brilliant as the sun, just like, which way is east and west? East over here, west over here. Okay. So the sun rises over here and sets over here. So when the sun sets over here, shortly after the sun setting over here, one may find the moon may rise over here, in the east. So in this case, shortly after Krishna's departure, as brilliant as the sun, like a full moon, as brilliant as the sun, like a new sun, giving shelter to religious principles. It gives shelter. Bhagavad Dharma gives shelter to these four principles and the purpose behind those four principles. Not only the four principles, not only auspiciousness, but transcendental life. And then the principles of dharma, of religiosity, will not only be restored, the auspiciousness of those will be restored, but the purpose behind them will be restored by propagating a Bhagavad Dharma. Now, what's the practical application of this for us? It's a nice question to ask when you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam. How does this apply to me? I've had a few conversations with some devotees while here, and what to speak of, you know, life in general, where circumstances of Kali Yuga is pinching. Yes. Ouch. Ow. Now, that's the consequence, one can think, it's the consequence of my own misdeeds. That's a nice way to think. And then, you know, where's the shelter? Well, you know, it's Kali Yuga. And where's the shelter? Because anywhere you turn, it's like grasping straws for a man that's drowning. It's not going to save the drowning man. Where do you take shelter? And it's accelerating. The storm, the irreligiosity of Kali Yuga is rapidly accelerating. And then we can get into that same mode of, you know, why is this happening? And I'm trying to be a good devotee, and why is this happening? And woo, woo, woo. You know, that voice that we sometimes take shelter of. Well, the Bhagavatam is the gift of the personality of Godhead after his departure, as with Mother Earth. Durbhaga, and it's, you know, Iva, as if neglected. We may feel neglected. Oh, Krishna forgot me. Krishna didn't forget us. We forgot Krishna. That's the problem. And the means to remember Krishna, the means to access Krishna's lotus feet, although it appears we're neglected, is through the medium of, keeping it very simple, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Dharma. That's the shelter. That's the means. And it's transformational. It can transform our hearts. It can transform our lives. It can transform life around us, at least the immediate proximity that our consciousness touches. And then beyond, collectively, as we, as members of Bhagavad Dharma practitioners, collectively engage in this process, it can change the current of the river. That's my understanding, at least, of this phrase, you know, the golden age within the iron age. Lord Chaitanya's advent provides the means for the next 10,000 years, for the golden age within the iron age. Well, that golden age within the iron age, my understanding is, it's the devotees. And then around the devotees, the iron age is still going on. Full steam ahead. Degradation kijai. Now we can be protected from that, not only protected from that, be completely uncontaminated by that, provided we take shelter of the Bhagavad Dharma process properly, and be instruments of Krishna in that situation to diminish the pernicious effects of the age of Kali. depending upon, you know, how Krishna chooses to empower us, you know, our capacity to receive descending mercy from Krishna, and then impact the atmosphere around us. At least those who, like us, don't want to participate in that degradation program. We just don't like it. And it's not just, you know, it's our children, our you know, the sufferers, that those who are dependent upon their protectors, the children of our congregation or community of devotees, who are dependent upon those who are the protectors of those children, the children can similarly be protected. And the children can be not protected if they don't have that connection with Bhagavad Dharma. If they do have that connection with Bhagavad Dharma, then it's very easy. It's very easy to not succumb to the degradation pressures that are going on in the schools and the public. I mean, adults, we know what it's like. But, you know, the degradation has, what, like, water seeks the lowest level. You know that phrase. And the degradation of the public education system and how what children do at earlier and earlier ages. Yikes. But the protection that parents can afford to their children is the atmosphere of Bhagavad Dharma. And then the children are protected. And in fact, they can uplift those around them rather than be, you know, exposed to toxicity. They can be, you know, the other way around. They can spiritually infect those around them, find others like them that also don't like the whole program, and share Bhagavad Dharma activities, just like Prahlad was doing with his schoolmates. Bhagavatam is really very beautiful. If we hear it and internalize it and live it, it's protection. It's the same. I'll say it again. It's the same as Krishna's presence on earth when he appeared in Dwarapayuga and by his footprints, the previous verse 26, by his footprints all auspiciousness was created. And then he left, and it appears, it's Kali Yuga, run for the hills. But Krishna's presence is also there, equally there, even in the the apparent feature of degradation and deterioration of the qualities of life, if we access it. Just as the gift, please take the gift. It's quite simple. The difficulty is we don't take it. You know, we do something else. One of the something else's is fear or doership. I'm gonna address this problem. Rah, rah, rah. And without Krishna consciousness. And we get crushed. Because the onslaught of the material energy is more powerful than the tiny jiva. But the tiny jiva that's empowered by Krishna is protected. It works. It's effective. We have to apply it properly. And again, each of us have our own little variety, our little version of the onslaught of Kali Yuga and how it's impacting our lives. We all have ours. And you can compare with each other. Look at mine. Oh, look at mine. Mine's worse. And so on. But that's, you know, it's interesting, but it's not a solution. The solution is assist one, just like yesterday evening, assist one another by engaging in hearing of Krishna Katha, because that very activity in association with one another brings spiritual strength and spiritual well-being. And the willingness to let go of the propensity for being enjoyers of matter, the affinity for fruitive activity and sense gratification and all of that. That's the problem. Our own contamination. It's not something out there, it's our own something in here. Taking shelter of Krishna properly. The means is given. Same as the message at the end of Canto 1, Chapter 3, same again as right here. If we just receive it properly. Maharaj Pariksit is speaking to Dharma, and he's also looking at the cow, seeing tears in her eyes, feeling neglected. And you know, the next thing that happens, he's drawing his sword, he's ready to chop the personality of Kali. He's given, again, the phrase, due process. And he's reached his conclusion. And it's a very similar... Have you ever thought the thought or asked yourself the question, why didn't Maharaj Pariksit just kill the personality of Kali? Take care of the whole thing. We wouldn't have had to, you know, so many people suffering in so many ways. He could have done it. He was powerful. He knew who the personality of Kali is and what he would do, you know, for the whole age of Kali. But he didn't. Why didn't he? It's the same question as, you know, why is there suffering in this world? Why did Krishna have an age of Kali? He didn't have to. He could have done something else. Same question as we spoke about it. Why do bad things happen to good people? Or you know, like, you know, some people say, why doesn't Krishna, if the problem is free will, why doesn't Krishna just take away our free will? Here's my free will, Krishna, please take it. That's how it works. When we extend, that's what Krishna wants. And if we say no, he doesn't interfere. Then there's one of the purposes of creation. And one of the purposes of Maharaj Pariksit not taking the life of the personality of Kali is there's lessons to be learned through the inconveniences of a position other than shelter at the personality of Godhead's lotus feet. And then the opposite is when we take shelter of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, there's Krishna. That the happiness that we want is there. But it's something that we have to do. Krishna isn't going to make us do it. And so free will continues. And misuse of free will continues because, you know, we have the tendency to do that. Long-standing tendency to do that. We're trying to correct that tendency, but, you know, not too much. Not sufficiently. We still like to misuse free will a little bit, at least. Anyway. The full stop of this material existence is provided within creation itself. Maharaj Pariksit understood it's Krishna's desire that there be this age of Kali, so I can't kill Kali. I can't go against Krishna's desire or Krishna's plan. I certainly can admonish him, and so he did. Well, you'll hear more about that. Okay, so any discussion or questions? Yeah. Hare Krishna.
My doubt is that during the arati, they show fire to the Lord, to the deity, so why are we doing that?
During arati, there's no fire to the Lord. Is that what you said? What did you say?
They're like showing the fire.
We're showing the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Lamp. So why do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Mm.
were making offerings of auspicious things, fragrances, incense, fire, water, fan, handkerchiefs. It's making of offerings. That which is from Krishna is being offered back to Krishna with devotion.
Okay, Maharaj.
You have a better system? It's a nice system. Something else? Yes?
This has something to do with the what's happening currently in the all the Abrahamic religions. What's happening across all the Abrahamic religions like Christianity and all right now. I mean, they have their own versions how God is going to come and protect them through all this testament versions of so many versions they have that over the next decade. And that has come to a point of where there is a civilizational conflict these days in the current world where they have their own versions of how God is going to come and protect them in second coming of Christ, and they have this whole biblical prophecies.
Okay.
So how should we look at those things?
You smile. Our authority is the Vedas. And amongst the Vedas, the Amala, the spotless authority is Srimad Bhagavatam. So for us, that's sufficient. And for others, they have other authority. And there are different varieties of those other authorities. And in many cases, it's the minds of men. It's not Scripture. But that's the authority that they accept. And the purpose behind, at least what you described, is some kind of impetus to take shelter of God. So that's nice, some kind of impetus to take shelter of God. That's very nice. Whether it's coming from the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, or combination, or whatever. Let them take shelter of God. That's good. The modes of nature are not so good. But, the impetus to take shelter of God, that's good. There's... For devotees, especially devotees that are inclined towards the mode of goodness, the intimidation, if you don't do this, it's just like, parenting. If you don't do this, I'm going to smack you. That's one way to get children to behave. But it's not nice. It's not wholesome. It doesn't result in a long-term, very happy, well-balanced child. When they become an adult, the parent isn't there to say, I'm going to smack you if you don't do it. So what happens? They do it. Yeah. And then there's resentment towards their parent. Anyways, there's lots of undesirable consequences. So for us, devotees that are inclined at least towards the mode of goodness, we want to serve Krishna because he's all attractive. And we know there's consequences if we don't surrender to Krishna, the all attractive. We become attracted by something temporary, limited. And that brings the loss of our ultimate happiness and the invitation of so-called temporary happiness that is really misery because we've lost our ultimate happiness. So we want to go towards the light. That's mode of goodness. And I'm not there. I'm struggling with these lower modes and lower tendencies. But Krishna is very kind. If I continue to look towards the light, light will drive away the darkness. That's our program. Yes.
Raj, regarding breaking the legs of the bull by Kali, is it like symbolic or it was the actual, like with hammer he was breaking it?
Interesting question. It's a question that I've heard discussed many times, inconclusively. And it both. That's, you know, the message that seems satisfying to me. I've not read anything from our acharyas that says conclusively this or that. Both. A real situation happened. It's not fiction. There was a person, you know, there was an impersonator king, the personality of Kali personified, who did that. And Maharaj Parikshit challenged him. So it's real. Now, Prabhupada has spoken about this in a broad sense. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is not to be taken allegorically. There are some places explicitly, like when Narada is speaking to King Puchini Bari. It's explicitly allegorical. Other than that, the explicit allegorical message is not allegorical. It's literal. It's history. It's Purana. Now, how is a bull having a conversation with a king? Because he's the personality of Dharma, not an ordinary bull. So, both. There's implicit message within the event that actually historically took place. And so it moves back and forth between the two.
I just have a follow-up. It is said that when Krishna came, he re-established the principles of dharma. And then again it is said, in each yuga, dharmic principles were broken.
In each of those?
In each yuga,
yeah.
The principles of dharma are being broken.
Well, they're being diminished. Broken, diminished. So,
but when the Lord incarnated, Krishna incarnated, he re-established all the dharmic principles back.
Yeah, he restored. Everything was like the spiritual world, because wherever he is, that's the spiritual world. He made it like the spiritual world by his presence. And persons that didn't want it to be like that, they were vanquished. He was creating auspiciousness by his presence and diminishing inauspiciousness by his presence. And he did it in different ways, sometimes through the heart, sometimes through his weapons. And then he left. At least his pastimes concluded. Does that answer your question? Maharaj Chaitanya, you always have a nice question. You have one this morning?
Yesterday you were describing about the disappearance of Krishna and how the Yadu dynasty, how Krishna left.
Yeah.
Regarding that, in the 11th chapter of the first canto, in text 9 I think, the Dwarakavasis, when Krishna enters into Dwaraka, in one of the prayers they say that we are so fortunate that your glance is upon us, wherein the demigods are also not able to see you. They say that. My question is, the demigods themselves have appeared as the Dwarakavasis or Yaduvasis. If they are themselves the demigods...
That's a trick question. Well, Let me ask you a question, and then I'll answer your question. When Lord Vishnu instructed Lord Brahma to tell the demigods to take birth on earth, the question for you was, did they vacate their post? Did they vacate their post? And there's the demigod planets are empty because they followed Vishnu's instruction. They got on their vimanas and descended. Or were expansions of them taking part in Krishna's pastimes? Or something else? Expansions of them. Are Jiva Goswami specifically describes like this. For the purpose of Krishna's pastimes, they can appear by expansion. It doesn't give the technology that says that. Here's another example of this. In a morning walk conversation in Juhu, Giriraj Maharaj asked the following question, which is similar. He said, when Krishna performs his pastimes on earth, somewhere in some universe, the same pastimes are being performed in sequence. Prabhupada said, yes. So Arjuna is here with Krishna on this earth. Is in the next universe, wherever Krishna's pastimes, is Arjuna also there? And then the next universe, and the next universe, the next universe, the next universe. And Prabhupada said, yes, he's an eternal associate of Krishna. So then the question, does that mean that Arjuna expands himself? And Prabhupada said, yes. Now, he didn't give the technology. Because how do you have multiple jivas? It's one, right? Not multiple. And Krishna can expand himself, but jivas can expand themselves. For a purpose of Krishna's pastimes, such an arrangement is made. It doesn't explain it, so don't ask me to explain it. But it's a statement. So, the demigods that take birth on earth, according to Krishna's instructions. Now we'll do the so many universes. But then each universe has their set of demigods. And so, presumably at least, a similar system. For the purpose of assisting Krishna's pastimes, their expansions take part in Krishna's pastimes. And when the pastimes are over, they resume their position of, entering again into the, whatever the proper language is, into the demigod from whom they were expansions.
I understood this, Maharaj, but why I was asking the question was, the prayers that they speak of, they generally we hear that the demigods have some of the Lord, but here they have so much of love for the Lord. The
natural. They're in his association. What happens when you're in the association of a lovable person? They're being benedicted. They're being asked by Lord Vishnu to take birth on earth to assist me in my pastimes. It's not like he needs help. He's giving them mercy. And they get that mercy. And by that association, they become attracted beyond their attraction as demigods and, pious souls who are serving somewhere in the heavenly planet. He's all auspicious. That's how it works. Similarly, us. We're quite ordinary people. Fact. We're quite insignificant. At the same time, by the process of devotional service, we can go far beyond our ordinariness by association with the process of devotional service and deity worship and kirtan and serving the devotees and all those things. Beyond our normal limitedness and ordinariness. And recognizing that, it's real easy to remain humble. Forgetting that, it's real easy to become proud. Okay, so I'm going to end because of the time. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.